Welcome to Love Wins with Ellis and Benita, a conversation of love, life, and relationships. Welcome to another episode of Love Wins with Ellis and Benita. It's Benita.
This is Ellis.
We are back and so happy to be back. We appreciate you for tuning in today. Appreciate you for tuning in the past. This is week 7. So lucky 7.
Wow.
Right? It's gone by fast.
7 is God's number.
That's God's number. So it's funny because we probably went a year and a half talking about we're going to do something.
If not more longer.
And now this is easy. Enough. We look forward to our recording sessions because it's a good way just for us to talk. Because as you know, as we said, we don't really prepare. So everything.
Because we've been prepared.
Yes, we've been preparing for 30 years of adulthood. So thank you. Again, follow us on Facebook at Love Wins with Ellis and Benita and hit us up in our email, lovewinswithellisandbenita@gmail.com. So today we're talking about healthy love or healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, we always, mm-hmm. we're in these things and when we talk relationships, it's not just the intimate relationships. It's all relationships. It's friendships. It's relationships with other family members outside of those in your household. It could just be with your kids. It can be work relationships.
Or your relationship with yourself.
With yourself. And everything, you know, we do, we have to put self first. If it don't feel good for us,
right.
you know, we need to analyze it, review it, and see what's going on. Am I supposed to be here?
That's right. I'm a firm believer you cannot love anyone else until you love yourself. If you don't have a healthy perspective of your identity, self-efficacy, then it's impossible to be in a healthy, loving relationship with anyone or anything. That's what I've learned in my 52 years on this earth.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, as a parent, I was about to say a mother, but I think all parents are this. As a parent, we're programmed that we put other people first a lot of times. Mm-hmm. It starts with our kids probably.
Yep.
And then you kind of nurture that same thing. You know, you put sometimes your mate first. Sometimes you put friends first. But it's a strain on us. It's draining.
It really is.
It sucks the energy from us. You know, and then we have nothing. So by the time we finish putting everything into all of these other factors, outside factors, and by outside, I mean outside of self, we have nothing.
You know, it's funny that you said that. A friend of mine told me this years ago, and she kept saying to me, she says, if you're okay, Ellis, your children will be okay. Until you're okay, your perception of your children are not going to be okay. And so once I gain a healthy perspective or a healthy perspective or a healthy relationship with myself, my outlook towards everything changed. Mm-hmm. But while I had an unhealthy perspective, I'll say even a fearful perspective, I kind of had a lot of doubt and operated out of fear and confusion. And I think I kind of projected that out in my relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was a cause of a lot of unhealthy relationships because I was unhealthy internally as it pertains to my peace and my happiness and my own self-love.
Absolutely. I believe in energy, you know, and we give off an energy, a mm-hmm. vibe. And if you're not good within, yeah. you can't give off anything positive. And it's going to make everything around you toxic or rot even, yeah. you know. So it goes to our kids.
Yeah.
You know, we do have to be okay.
I like the whole concept of the law of attraction. It's you know, that you attract what you are. And I was talking to someone the other day, and they kept wondering why they kept dating the same kind of person. And I was saying to them that, you know, oftentimes we attract an unhealthy person because we are unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And though we're hoping and we want to attract somebody healthy, you really cannot attract a whole person if you're not whole. So you find yourself attracting an unhealthy person because you're unhealthy or you're not whole or you're broken. Mm-hmm. And I think that in order for us to garner up, you know, whether it's energy or vibes or spirits or just a love presence, in order to attract something, you know, healthy, that I think that we have to really do the inner work, which takes time. And it doesn't happen today.
A lot of times we don't take time. You know, no. I hear people say, and I may have been one of these people at one time, that you just never like to be by yourself. Mm. And so when in a romantic type relationship, we end up going from one to the next to the next.
Yeah.
And as you say, we need time in between to do some self-reflection, you know, to kind of figure out how I got here or, right. you know, what was going on in this relationship, you know, that I allowed that I didn't like, or, you know, what did I do that I can do better the next time?
Yeah.
So, you know, we do need that time, but we don't give it.
I wonder if a factor in that is that you don't have people around you who are healthy, mm-hmm. Who can say, hey, you're not ready for that, or don't do that, who can stop you because they love you enough to know that you're not in a place where you want to be to receive what you think you really need at that particular time. Mm-hmm. I was telling my son this past weekend, I said, for the first time, I have loving, healthy people around me compared to what I used to have. It's like, oh God, they didn't care about me at all. But now I'm surrounded by healthy and loving people, mm-hmm. and it feels so much different than what I thought I had at one time. You know what I mean? It's like when you're surrounded by people who love you and who are healthy, they kind of have your back and they can tell you what you do need and what you don't need, kind of discourage you from pursuing things that, you know, you think you really want.
Yeah. You have situations where we talk about surrounding. I look at sometimes family, you know, is a lot. You know, there have been times where, take like holidays, and you know, it's a family dinner and this is what we traditionally do. And we feel like obligated to go, but you really don't want to, because sometimes these settings can be the most unhealthy, the most toxic. And I learned probably 10 years ago, I ain't gotta go.
No.
You know, there were some days I just dreaded. I didn't want to do this. I'm like, I ain't
should
gotta
you go if you don't want
to
go?
No, absolutely.
Do you have to go if you don't want to go?
No, you have to protect yourself. And if this space that you're going to walk in, you already know it has some toxic elements in here, is not going to make you feel better, you don't have to go. I don't believe you got to go.
So are you suggesting that we learn unhealthy and toxic relationships from our family?
Yes, I'm suggesting that it is a trickle down.
You're cooking with peanut oil. There it is, Johnson.
It's gonna be hot.
You're getting hot over here.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Talk about it.
You know, come on. We learn, that's where the talking about folks start, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my family, I'm talking about my family. You know, they grew up in the church and, you know, everybody amen and love all this.
See, that ain't the church.
What?
That ain't the church.
They love and everything is good. As soon as you get home, you see that heifer hat on, you know.
Not the heifer.
That heifer.
You know you country music use the word heifer.
That's right. You see that
heifer. That's about my grandma's always.
Yeah, so you come back home and then as kids, we're not allowed to be in the conversation, but we hear and we know about the person that they're talking about. And so we grow up and we learn this.
So we were taught to be inauthentic, you know, quote unquote, fake as a child from watching adults around us pretend to like someone, whether it's in church or even the family.
Or just pretend to be someone.
Or pretend to be someone.
Somewhere and then the real you is over here.
So I'm going to push this a little bit further.
Oh, push it.
I would say that is a byproduct of being Black in America. And this is what W.E.B. Du Bois talked about, the double consciousness, and that we had to wear the mask in order to get through or to survive in this country.
Yes.
And so as Black folk, we've always had to pretend to be healthy, though we were broken on the inside, just to make ends meet.
My dad used to say, my dad had this saying. So, you know, my father was a Freemason. And so, you know, and you land brick in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, through this century, he was land brick. So he worked for, back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of white developers. And he used to always talk about, he said, yeah, I got to go get him this chicken shit grin. So, you
not
know,
the chicken shit grin.
You got to smile up in their face, yeah, just so you can get this business.
That's the jig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you knew, you know, he would speak on how, you know, he was treated, or what he thought, you know, about the way he was treated and what these people were really about. But they act like they loved you,
yeah,
to death. And, you know, my dad, to get this business, yeah, he did the chicken shit grin.
Yeah. And you almost had to if you want to get paid to provide for your family. Mm-hmm. And so you look at what our foreparents had to endure just to provide for us, the sacrifice they had to make, the smiles and all the crap that they took just to put food on our table.
And what does that do to our households?
Oh.
When you bring, you had to take crap.
It was a petri dish of trauma.
Yeah, and then you got to come home. You bring it home.
Yeah.
And so you're right. It's the petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, you know, we the little germs. We in here too.
Yeah.
And so we're, you can't separate that all the time. You know, you can't leave the stress of work and stuff outside of your home. You bring that home and you create more toxic space in the house.
Does anyone know how to separate that? And, you know, I remember someone told me that, because I used to work in a group home, in a prison, and he would say, you need to make sure that you cleanse yourself before you get home. And I was like, I don't know what you mean by that. You got to shake off that stuff. So about my cousin calls it, my cousin's a firefighter, works in Oakland, has to deal with all kind of crazy stuff. And so he talks to me on the way home, and then when he gets home, he says, okay, cousin, I got to get in character. Like, thank you for listening to me. So I've given him the space to, you know, share all the stuff that's happened to you at work. So when you get home, you can be this father and you can be this husband that you're supposed to be. You know what I mean? So he can share all that stuff with me. I'm going to keep it secret. So he goes home, he can be happy, he can be free, and he can, you know, raise his children in a healthy environment, which neither of us had.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think we need that kind of space to get that stuff off of us before we get home. So we're not crapping on the people at home. We should be loving them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens all the time. And I can't speak with nobody else, but I think it happens all the time in the African-American community. When we get home, it becomes a safe place for us to act up and act a fool.
Yeah, because that's when we, because if we do it in the street, you know, we're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, like, you kill the street.
You can't, you know, go and, yeah, you know, kick over trash cans and all of this, you know, stuff before you get home. You know, yeah, you got to go home because we worry, you know, we're always concerned. Maybe you go to the gym. Maybe you punch
that's
on
what
the
I
punching
do.
Bag,
I go to the gym,
you know, for an hour or two, you know, or however long, you know, it needs to take for you to shake some of it off. But I don't know if you could truly release all of it before you get home. That's why I've been preaching for a long time.
Are you preaching now?
I'm preaching.
Uh-oh.
But no, you got to figure out what it is you love.
Yeah.
Because you can't be a dual person.
That's real.
You know, you
but
can't.
How do you not be that dual person?
You can't be that dual person. How do you not be?
Yeah.
When you figure out how, whatever you're doing for your living, because, you know, we all got a living. I planted some coins outside and ain't grown no money tree yet. So we got to have a living, right?
That big old cabbage.
There ain't no dollars. I hate that. That's gone. we got to make money. So we got to make money and doing things that we love to do. That's healthy. Because that means what you're doing for a living is you're putting some love into it. It's giving love back.
Yeah.
And then you can take that love back into your household. And sometimes it costs us to reduce our living standard.
Yes.
You know, maybe you can't afford the 6,000 square foot home at, you know, if I choose that I want my living to be to sell the produce I grow in my backyard. You know, I may not be able to afford my 6,000 square foot home,
yeah,
but, you know, I can afford the smaller one.
I mean, I think that process that you just mentioned is a part of the healthy thought process that goes into having a healthy relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. When you're able to say, okay, this makes me happy. You know, for example, I may be working in corporate America and get treated like crap, but I'd rather leave corporate America, make less, and be happier for the sake of my health and for the, you know, for the survival of my family, versus being somewhere I'm not, spending very little time with my kids, spending very little time with my spouse, spending very little time with myself, and just find my own inner peace and happiness.
Right. And we're not saying that you cannot be happy in corporate America. If that's what makes you happy, sure. I mean, there's tons of people who love that. They love what they do. But, you know, if you don't pivot, you know, you gotta change. You can't live. I mean, we don't realize, I think we know now, but sometimes we don't realize the amount of stress that unhealthy things put on our body.
Yes.
We got it down in terms of what we're putting in our bodies. Yeah. We know which foods and beverages and different things are bad for us internally. But there's so many other things that we don't consume, you know, through our mouths that are bad for us. And we just don't think about it.
I had a conversation on Friday night with a good friend of mine, and he was going through a litany of things that are causing unhealthy thoughts, unhealthy eating, relationships. And he said that there is a systematic programming through television and social media that causes us to have stress, internal stress, and to think about these things, which causes us to eat unhealthily, drink unhealthily, and to pursue unhealthy relationships. He was talking about what we watch, what we listen to, as well as what we eat contributes to us having propensity to have unhealthy relationships. Mm-hmm. As I'm sitting there listening to him, I'm thinking to myself, like, everything that we're surrounded by, we're inundated with unhealthy messages.
Yeah.
And if you don't have enough knowledge or self-awareness to separate these messages, then you begin to take on these messages as if they're your own, and they're not your own. Now, think about a rap video when someone's grabbing a gun, a woman is up in the video doing her thing, and those messages are coming, and all of a sudden our girls and our boys think that's the norm.
Right.
That's a false message. That's an unhealthy message. And so many of these messages are being sent out there, and we don't
realize that we're receiving them.
Not at all. I didn't think about it until he said it. I mean, I didn't think about it. I think that Hollywood sends unhealthy images of relationships. And we're pursuing this Hollywood love fantasy, and it doesn't exist in real life. And I think that if we're going to pursue any kind of healthy relationship, we have to understand that communication, disagreement, forgiveness, sacrifice is all a part of that. That you can't be in a healthy relationship and not be whole or healthy with yourself. Like, you can't be in a healthy relationship and you're lying to yourself.
Right. Yeah, you gotta tell yourself the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. If nobody else. You know, I was, I don't know the statistics of divorce. It's pretty high. It's like almost 50% if it's not 50%,
it's
right?
More like 70.
But I think if we took the time before we divorce, and not that this applies to everybody, but I think if we took the time before we divorced and we looked at the factors that lead to divorce and we start going back to the root of those factors, I think a lot of us would see that the things that cause whatever created the Petri dish, as you said, the things that created the Petri dish come from outside. You know, you hate your job, you know, so you bring it home and then you nitpick because he wore a green shirt and you hate green. You know, just different things like that lead to animosity in the house. I think it will help our numbers, but we don't give ourselves time to do no.
It says today that 39% of marriages in the United States are ending in divorce.
39%, that seems low.
And then another one says 50% of marriages in the United States, pretty much 4 out of 1,000 marriages are ending in divorce.
400 out of 1,000?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. Well, which, even if it's, you think about it, that's just those marriages that ended in divorce.
Yeah, not the ones that go be separated.
That's what I was going to say. They're separated, yeah. Or those relationships that people are in, and you have children, yeah. And they're ending.
But they were never married.
They were never married.
Documentation. Yeah.
You know, and again, it goes back to what will we settle for? So that's what I was going to say is, I was reading the scripture we talked about on Sunday in church, is that there is no fear in love. And so what I've been thinking about, oftentimes the love that I thought I had was rooted in fear. And so if that be the case, I wasn't loving the person out of a love. I was loving them out of fear, which oftentimes ended in control, dishonesty, manipulation, so on and so forth. Because perfect love supposedly casts out fear. But when we're operating in a love that's going to win for us, it's a love where I can be honest. I can listen to the other person disagreeing with me. Mm-hmm. I can hear what they have to say without trying to, you know, put them down. You know, when we get into a disagreement, I'm not going to call them out of their name.
Right.
You know, and they come back and say, well, you know I love you.
Yeah, well, how do you know?
You can't love me if you're not going to show me what love is.
Right. How do you know?
And I was just thinking about how many relationships I was in that were actually unhealthy relationships, and I'm trying to hold on to them when I should have been letting them go.
Well, I know we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back because I want to know the why do we hold on to things that are unhealthy. So we'll talk about that in the second section. So we'll be right back.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
And we're back with Love Wins with Ellison Benita. So we were about to talk about what makes us stick like Velcro to unhealthy relationships.
So are you saying that often we hang in broken relationships because we are afraid to leave, or are we hanging in these broken relationships, unhealthy relationships, because I really love the person, or the person really loves me?
Those are...
What's love got to do with it?
Yeah. Those are two scenarios, because I'm not saying anything. Because one is we feel as though this individual loves us. And so we're going to hang in there. We're going to hang in there because we're going to work it out.
Now, who taught us that?
Grandma that stayed married for 60 years.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
Grandma, you know, because sometimes they do stay because they were held. I mean, you know, I don't think women were able to leave a lot of times financially, so they stayed.
Is it healthy to stay in a broken or unhealthy relationship out of the hopes of the person changing?
No. I mean, when have you ever seen, I bet you, if you did a survey, you know, that he or she's going to change, and you standing in there hoping, how many people have changed? I would guess out of 10 people, one. I would bet the percentage is 10% of the people change for the better, that, and they lead into a healthy relationship.
We have to categorize change. And what does change mean? And are we talking about change in terms of, you know, how you care for me, how you provide for me, how you speak to me?
When we talk about change, we got to talk about whatever the problem is. So whatever the change, whatever the issue is that's causing y'all to have some strife. So then you got to change. So
right.
Like, say for instance, if she won't go to work and, you know, you need her to work. And that's an easy change. You just got to get up and go to work, you know? So that's an easy fix. But if, you know, let's say this person is violent towards another person, you know, every time they go upside your head, she say, "I'm sorry, Alice, boo, I ain't gonna do it no more." Mm. So the next time she go upside,
you know, I love you.
You know, I love you. That's why I hit you. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't hit you if I didn't love you.
Yeah. Or put you down.
Yeah. You know, and so sometimes people will say that these arguments, these heated arguments where there's, you know, some vicious name calling, you know, they'll say passion. They'll use the term passion and kind of cloak it in love. You know, I'm so passionate about you. That's why I get so upset with you, you know, and then you'll say, "Ain't nobody gonna love me like this." Because those people literally love you to death.
To death.
To death.
Until they kill you.
That's right. Or until you get so absorbed in this negative stuff, it kills you. You kill yourself because you take it. And what was the first reason you said people stay? Because I even missed that. I heard it.
I think the hope of the person changing.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know, I'm going to stay. I've heard people say, "Well, you know, I ain't going to leave him because I know, you know, God going to use him later. He going to change. I don't want no woman, you know, to get it.
To get this that you already know you got."
Right. You know, it's like, you know, I want her to reap the benefits of my hard work. Yeah,
that's like believing in the Easter Bunny. You know, because you don't.
The Easter Bunny. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you don't know nothing about it. That's a fiction thing. I mean, who this person might be. You own what you got is what you know.
So, question.
Yes.
Question.
I have an answer.
Why is it that individuals stay in verbally abusive relationships before they even get to the physical? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of race relationships that are not even physically abusive. They're emotionally or verbally abusive.
Because people say stupid things as kids. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words never hurt me. Words do hurt.
I got one better than that.
What?
When you're taking those dumb vows and you got to stand up and say, "For richer or for poor, for better or for worse." The dumbest thing ever spoken. For richer or for poor, for better or for worse. My question is, what is the worst?
What is worse? Yeah.
What is the worst?
What is worse?
And why do I have to take a vow to hang in the worst of the worst of the worst of situations?
Yeah. Because we didn't come to this togetherness
Planning
for worse.
No.
We planned for this bright love and this future. So at least to stay where we at.
That's right.
We came in.
That's
right.
So I think the whole, as you said, sticks and stones may break us bones, but words will never harm us. Another lie.
Yeah, that's
words hurt.
Yes.
Words hurt. Much more, I mean, I think that, unfortunately, I'm going to say this, if I get busted in the head, that will heal.
Yes.
But the emotional wounds that I'm enduring before you bust me in the head, that takes a little bit longer than the physical healing.
I agree.
And I think that, and this, I got three daughters, so I'm intentional about what I'm about ready to say. I don't think women should be in any relationship with a man that is going to verbally abuse them or call them out their name for longer than 1 second. Like, he got one time to act that way, and then it has to be over with.
So, but you do agree that it should go the other way as well?
I do.
I know we got some slick mouths.
Oh, shoot. Slick, like razor blade.
Yes, I know I can go there. And so we shouldn't do it either, you know, to the man.
And you're right. And I guess I'm speaking in from a father's position, but you're completely right. Nor should a man stand in relationship. I know several men who are in marriages and their wives talk to them like, I would like, whoa.
It's quite uncomfortable.
Mm.
It's quite uncomfortable. Mm. And he's not happy. My dad has his cousin. And, I haven't seen these people in years, but I remember when we were young, well, when I was a little girl, elementary school, we would go to their house sometime. And she was married. I mean, she talked to her husband like this dude was like a straight slave. Mm. I mean, she did nothing.
Straight slave. 12 years slave. 12 years
and so when he left, I understood. I think when he left, I may have been in fourth or fifth grade, but I understood then. I don't blame him. He got to go.
Well, you know, that there is a notion going around now that because the woman is becoming the breadwinner, how she treats her her husband or partner is allowed because, you know.
So money will make you belligerent, ignorant, disrespectful.
I can't say that. I've heard that. I've had conversations with individuals about how in the progression of women and the liberation of women, in essence, is bringing out a sense of female machismo or feminismo. I don't know what it is.
I mean, we do that. I mean, women do that. I don't say we. I mean, not me, but women. I've seen that. You know, they feel like we make the most money. We the law around here. And I don't think that's fair. You know, when I was married, I was not the breadwinner. But I didn't feel like my husband was that way with me. You know, I still had decision rights in the house.
Right.
You know, I had, you know, the money. I mean, I didn't have issues with money or spending the money that he made. You know, so that wasn't the case. And I don't understand why we feel like, because I think when the man makes a lot of money, we still feel like, yeah, we're going to spend it.
We're going to spend it anyway.
And yeah, so we should still kind of, you know, be the same way when we make the money. He still should be able to spend and make decisions that we ain't talking now. See, this is the thing with me. I try to be a queen all the time.
Uh-huh,
all
right? Uh-huh.
I try to be a queen. Now,
the crown is
sometimes
on the head,
my crown
and
fall off, but I try to remain
the crown
queen.
Never falls off. It may tilt.
Well, tilt a little bit.
You know.
But my sister's supposed to come and fix my crown.
Right.
But being that I'm trying to be a queen, I recognize a king. And he can't remain king if I'm kicking him, I'm calling him stupid. You know, I'm looking like the jester when I'm really trying to make him the jester. But I'm gonna be the one being the court jester if I'm coming out of my queenly self.
I wanna say that one reason that we have these imbalanced, unhealthy relationships is because men are not being reared to be, there's a lot of men being raised in single parent homes as I was. And my mother, my grandmother, my great grandmother were very intentional about ensuring that I possessed enough masculinity that was not gonna be oppressive to another woman or anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And I think today I see a lot of relationships in which men are almost afraid to express themselves or talk about what's on their mind or really saying what they're thinking out of fear. If I don't do this, you know, she's gonna hold the goods, she's gonna do X, Y, and Z. You know, it's almost like, and it goes both ways, that there's not any candor in the relationships. Like, how can we get to a place of healthiness if we are unable to talk about things that are really giving us a challenge in our relationships? Like, how can we have a conversation? You won't listen to me. You're always on defense. You won't hear me out. I mean.
Well, as you said at the very beginning of this show, you said there is no fear in love. There should be no fear in love.
None.
You should be free, you know, completely free. Yeah. This is where you should be naked.
And heard.
Yes.
Like, my partner has to hear me. Like, I'm going to say what I need to say, but at least hear my heart. Hear me, because I'm putting it all on the line for us. I want you to hear me. Mm-hmm. And then what you do with that, you know, it determines where the state of the relationship goes. But I think we're poor listeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're very poor. I know I was. I was a poor listener. I scratched that. I was a great listener, but I was unable to articulate what I was feeling without being frustrated, because I didn't feel like I was being heard.
So do you think the lack of us listening is due to this, we're loving ourselves more. You know, I mean, do we think we get to, is there a healthy or unhealthy level of the self-love that turn, where does it turn to self-absorption?
Well, I think when you're operating in self-love, you're able to hear and be in tune, not only with others, but also with your surroundings, with nature. And so you begin to listen more because you begin to slow down more and you don't take yourself as serious. I had something happen that I called somebody back after 30 years. She said that I did something. So for 30 years, I was like, I didn't do that. You crazy. That's not what happened. Well, I had a conversation with my son on Saturday night and the exact same scenario came up and I was like, oh, wow, I did do that.
So you were able to listen to him and you were able to hear him.
And I called her on Monday and I apologized. This happened in what, 1990? You know, I asked, you know what you said I did in 1990, I did and I apologized. Mm-hmm. For calling you to doubt your intuition, the voice inside of you. And so she appreciated it, you know, it's 30 years later.
Yeah.
But it was important for me to say, you know what, I was wrong.
You had to, you came into this fruition and you had to release it.
Yeah. And also, realizing that I've been acting this way for 30 years. It's time for stuff to end. I got to grow the hell up.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to be in a healthy relationship, I have to be able to accept fault when I make mistakes. And no matter what a person said, you know what I did? I'm wrong.
I think those of us who have agreeing with you, those of us who have a healthy dose of self-love, we listen. But those who are self-absorbed, they only hear. Because they'll stop, you know, and hear you mm-hmm. talk, but they're not listening because it ain't, you know, that ain't necessarily, you know, they've already painted a picture of who they are. And that's kind of where you are. You already said 30 years ago when this person said, you did it, you, this is who I am at this time.
Yeah.
And now you've grown and you know you're somebody else, or you brought into the Alice that we know and love today.
Hey, love me.
The 52-year-old Alice.
52-year-old Alice.
But that's good. I mean, development and change are always positive. Sorry.
You know, I was telling my son, and he's 24, and he's done some things that I did. And I said, the difference between you and I is that I didn't have a father. And so because I know what you're going through, I can speak to that and get you to understand that you are in an unhealthy place and that it's your choice whether or not you want to stay here. We were talking about his relationship with this lady. And I said, that's not healthy. Now, you being upset because she's wearing her hair in a certain way because she may attract attention to another man, mm-hmm. that's your insecurity. And you are not, you can't impose that on her because she was wearing her hair out before.
Right.
And I said, more importantly, if she has a very abusive dad and controlling dad, and here you are exhibiting the same kind of characteristics as her dad, guess what? Y'all not going to last.
Right.
So you need to check this right now if you want to be with her. Mm-hmm. Because she's not going to tolerate being controlled. Because she's being controlled by her father. And it appears she's attracted somebody who she loves, who's very much like her father. And I'm telling you right now, she's going to cut you quickly.
Yeah.
Because she's a free bird.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand that.
Yeah. That's different. And, you know, we do now come from all different walks of life. And so you do kind of have to do some digging
yes.
as to who you're getting
yeah.
involved with.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I don't want to just stay, again, for our listeners, right on the intimate relationships. There are so many things. You know, we have to build, foster healthy relationships with our kids. You know, sometimes we think, you know, we did all these things, and I'm talking to myself right now about myself. We've done these things for our kids, and, you know, we think we've done great things for our kids. And then sometimes, you know, when you talk to the kids and they give you their perspective of it, it wasn't so great. You know, we have to be able to listen to them, have the conversation without being defensive. And just, you know, that's something I'm going through with Navy right now, as she's kind of, you know, growing into herself, and, you know, and I'm not even defensive. If there was something that she felt that I did,
yeah.
you know, I go ahead and apologize, even though sometimes there are circumstances mm-hmm. that maybe I will share later, but for now, you know, I'm good mm-hmm. with just apologizing for what she feels that I did to her. Because it is important not to always be the, I'm the mama, so I'm right. Or I'm the dad, so I'm right. You know, they're adults now. And we, you know, we just got to be honest about the situation and do what we need to do to allow them to heal as well.
I mean, kudos to you for being self-aware and being able to recognize that, because I think that goes a long way for not only for her healing, but, you know, showing that y'all have a healthy relationship, mm-hmm. and that going forward, everyone's relationship is healthy, because there's right. so many parents who are so defensive, you know, well, I was going through this at that time, yeah. versus saying, you know what, I did that, I was wrong,
exactly.
and I apologize.
Right.
Because yep. that's going to help them have a better relationship right. than they had.
Because of what I was going through, you know, that came from somewhere else. It right. had nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
You know.
And children can take that on as their own. As just, they blame themselves.
Okay. Yeah. And you don't have to do that. And so we need to release them from that. And, you know, like I said, create a healthy space for them. So we got to take another break. And we'll be right back with more Love Wins with Ellison Bonita.
Three Guys Talking Smack and Listen to Music is an eclectic blend of genres for your listening pleasure. Find our podcast on the Black Talk Radio Network or listen to our stream on Live 365. From praise to timeless tunes to an all-out dance party, our DJs spin the tunes to make you feel good. Reminisce with us on Thursdays as we take you back to our greatest moments. Three Guys Talking Smack and Listen to Music, the intersection of music and culture.
We're back, Love Wins with Ellison Bonita. So we always have really good conversations during our breaks. So we want to talk about, just for our last few minutes, are the things that cause the unhealthiness in our relationships, the traumas, are those things in our DNA? Are we pre-wired, you know, to carry narcissism? What else we say, Ellison?
Strife, bitterness, lovelessness, defensiveness, pettiness.
Are we pre-wired?
Insecurities.
So what do you think?
I think we are. I think the trauma, because you look at, you know, slavery, you know, how the residual effects of slavery is still impacting us now emotionally and spiritually. And I think that we really have to get to the root of who we are. In order that we can cut off or sever these unhealthy behaviors we have. And I think we have to tell our children our story. They have to know what we went through. Mm-hmm. So they know what to avoid, but we can get it out of ourselves so we can talk about it to get it reconciled.
Okay. So we got to be open. We got to be transparent in order to break the cycle.
Yes.
Because that's why it's genetic, just yes. because we're not talking. So yes. it's not in the DNA. It's, you know, what's common.
I can't think of the lady's name. Joy LaRue or something like that. She talks about trauma.
Okay.
And how my interpretation is that trauma is DNA. It is hereditary. Because the pain and suffering, once we, just as, you know, women get, they can get breast cancer from stress and things of that nature. Well, it gets part of your system. So it becomes a part of your biological system. I'm not an MD at all.
Passing it.
So you're passing that through to your next generation. It has to be in our blood. Okay. And, I mean, I believe it is somehow. And I'll try to do more research about this.
Yeah, because that's, you know, we want to know that. Because if it's something, you know, shoot, we need to get on the herbs and essential oils, you know, to keep, you know, these monsters and demons from going to the next generation. That's what we need to do. You know, what's wrong? You know, I think, you know, what we do is, I don't know about genetics and DNA, but I do understand learned behavior. And so if this, we mimic what we see. So if we've seen these behaviors, if you've seen, you know, your mama talk to your daddy crazy, or your daddy talking to your mom crazy, or you know, everybody is unhappy at work. You know, one thing that I know is learned behavior. I used to trip about this all the time. It was almost like it was a norm to not like your mother-in-law.
Oh, goodness.
That seemed like it's the norm. And so I like my mother-in-law. I love my mother-in-law.
And so I said, you know, I think we already go in not ready to like her, or as mothers, we already ready to not like this, your son's new love, you know, the wife. And so we create this little funky environment that, you know, that creates the toxic. So I think we, some of the stuff is just learned, and, you know, the media doesn't help because you got the monster-in-law movies that the mother-in-law is always wicked. You know, these things are what we're programmed to see and believe.
Now, I just did a quick Google search. It says the idea that trauma can leave a chemical mark in a person's genes, which is then passed down subsequently to other generations, is called the epigenetic explanation.
Okay.
So yes, our trauma and our stress
can become genetic traits.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, which is so important for us to understand and to ensure that we're getting whole and healed before we reproduce.
Mm. Yeah, because, you know, the elders in the community, I always say, you know, you putting that bad stuff in that mm-hmm. baby, you know, they mm-hmm. always said that.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of this issue yeah. before you have a baby.
Yeah. And they knew. They know. I mean, old folk knew about this.
I know my grandma used to, you know, I had a cousin that, I mean, we're not that different in age, but he used to cry a lot when he was small. And Granny used to, you know, she would say, that's because his daddy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so.
They were very particular about who you reproduce with. You don't want to be with that boy. That boy comes other side of the track. His mm-hmm. mama, his daddy, mm-hmm. like, don't be having no baby by him, because, you know, like,
and that baby gonna be mm-hmm. like that or whatever.
Like, you know, that family's stupid. You know, stupid. You know, stupid is passed down from.
Stupid is genetic.
Yeah, stupid is genetic. And people think, oh, that's making sense. Well, the science is saying there's some truth to that. That, you know, our genetic disposition, if not healed, it can be passed down from generation to generation.
Well, can't we? But what about, like, you take a kid who, you had this baby, like, two stupid people got a baby. And this baby is taken away. And Ellis, we raised this baby because we're not stupid. So you're saying that our baby wouldn't be brilliant. This baby that we plucked out of this stupid house and we bought into another space of love, where there's we introduced them to different cultural and educational experiences.
Well, you know, the old folk would say, you know, you can't blame it on education. You know, stupid is what stupid does. And if you just stupid, there's nothing that you can do to get it out of your system. You can't fix
stupid.
You can't fix
stupid. We can't fix
it. I remember, as a former teacher, I heard another teacher say, are you dumb or stupid? Choose one. Hmm. And I was like, whoa.
Which one should I pick?
Which one? I would be dumb. I would be stupid.
I don't know.
It's like, good. But, you know, again, I don't know. I like to think education and love cures all, especially love. And I think love is very healing. I think love is very affirming. And I think love is healthy when it's operated fully at its maximum.
I think that's the perfect ending. Amen. So thank you for listening to episode 7 of Love Wins with Ellis and Benita. Hit us up on Facebook at Love Wins with Ellis and Benita, and email us at lovewinswithellisandbenita@gmail.com. Remember, August 15th, we are having the Black Farmers Market over at
the 1700 Blair Street.
Yes.
The Way of the Lord Fellowship, Richmond, Virginia, 23220.
Please come out. We have an Instagram page for that, Black Farmers Market. So follow that. And we hope to see you there. Again, thank you to Black Talk Radio Network, Mrs. Scotty Reed, for having us, and also to Three Guys Talking Smack and Listen to Music podcast and stream for helping us with the production of our show. Peace and love, everybody.
Peace and love, family.
We hope you enjoy Love Wins with Ellis and Benita. Until next time, put love first.
Hashtag Love Wins. If you'd like to reach us, reach out at lovewinswithellisandbenita@gmail.com.